This is an example of speech.
All our history.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment sections in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have weak thoughts about the word liberty and disagreement about being scared of Russia, middling thoughts on the GOP tax scam after two quarters, and closing thoughts on the American conservative right from its money to its racism. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Now, it's time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts.
Stage can turn a blind eye. Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back and enjoy some cocoa beans and don't wonder what profit really means. Follow dictates from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fuck it, just do whatever you please. For the night commuters in Uganda to the poor crack babies.
All right. Welcome, 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 everybody, to Tell Me What to Think. I'm welcoming myself back to Tell Me What to Think after a one-week hiatus spent in the wild woods of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Thank you to Dave Egan at DrunkLocetus for filling in with me. And thank you, Charles, as just for doing it like normal.
For being there, okay.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. You can find Charles on Twitter at green_weird, which is WYRD. Email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. And what else can you do? Find our listen to the podcast. I guess.
Yeah, mostly. Listen to the podcast anywhere, almost anywhere.
You can preview stories we talk about or suggest stories by using the hashtag on Twitter, TMWTT. All right. Well, we were just discussing the Quiet Skies. I feel like initiative should be in the name. I don't know, but it's. I don't think it is. The Quiet Skies program being run by the TSA under the banner of Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security.
I'm not entirely sure what.
I mean, you're not sure if the TSA is under them or what.
No, I'm not exactly sure who's directing. Like, the poll program is shrouded in such classified secrets, mm-hmm. It seems like these are taskings, right? They get names from other parts of the, you know, the alphabet acronym soup. And these people apparently think it's interesting to seek intelligence on civilians, American civilians even.
Well, this is actually specifically American civilians. Who the hell knows what they're doing to the civilians that are not American? Non-U.S. citizens who are coming to the United States.
All right.
So this is a Quiet Skies program, and I think that's kind of what this is. It's like, okay, if they're doing that to them, and I guess, I don't know, but we'll get into it. So let me just explain it quick. It is a program that is looking at all U.S. citizens. Well, all U.S. citizens could be part of it that are entering the United States, I guess, through airports. And it is for those that are not already on a terrorist watch list or whatever. And I don't know if that's because they are already monitoring all of those people or they can't fly anyway. I don't really quite understand.
No, those people can't get on planes.
Okay.
No fly list, remember?
Yeah. So... So this is for, yeah, anyone could be a part of this who's a U.S. citizen. And, they have like this, the criteria for how you are actually then monitored, you know, like in person by marshals or like through like cameras, and they like shadow you at airports and on planes and all that. Like it's
scary. Yeah, like federal air marshals.
Yeah. And apparently,
I was going to say that serious, like, you know, bonded and trained security personnel who are on almost all flights.
Yeah. And so I guess this would be like, hey, keep an eye on them and these people, you know. And it is part of the reason this is coming to light, it sounds like, is because some of the marshals themselves don't like this. They're not sure if it's legal. They're not sure it's effective in any way, and it might be just a waste of time. And I think it does work. Open up the, you know, not that I don't think any aspects of the government should be precluded from, surveilling foreign people who come here, like, ever. Like, obviously, that's a thing that governments do and should do sometimes. But it does make you wonder, if this is so expansive for American citizens, like how crazy overboard are they going for people who are not U.S. citizens?
I mean, they have a pretty extensive check at the border where they take your retinal scan and fingerprints.
Yeah, talks about, like, the, like, once they're watching you, because that just is, okay, you get let into the country, right? That's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're let in, like, are they doing, like, because to U.S. citizens, they're, like, these checklists they have involve, like large gulps of the Adam apple. have a
penetrating stare?
Yeah.
Abnormally aware. Oh, and what was the third one that I also failed? Oh, excessive fidgeting.
Sleeping during the flight.
Man, I sleep on everything that moves. If I'm going more than 10 miles an hour, I'm like out like a baby. Plus I'm driving.
No, I agree. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I said before the show that, you know, this is one of those things that, like, I am sure we are going to hear more about. It got broken in the Boston Globe by Jana Winter. Jana Winter. I hate that people have names and then I'm, like, required to pronounce them. I don't know.
I got to highlight this point in the Boston Globe article. The emailed statement from the spokesman, James Gregory, quote, "As its assessment capabilities continue to enhance, federal air marshals leverage multiple internal and external intelligence sources in its deployment strategy." Oh, FAMS. I assume that's some kind of program acronym. Like, the internal and external intelligence sources is kind of a key word there. That is a tip of the hat. Like, this program is super classified, and this program in particular doesn't necessarily purely involve TSA and maybe even not even necessarily parts of Homeland Security or the Homeland Security umbrella.
So it seems like, okay, so that to me, I'm, you know, making some assumptions here. That to me means other aspects of the government, you know, who knows, like a state, CIA, FBI, whatever it is, military even, are saying, hey, those people need to be watched. Since you're already at the airport and we don't think very highly of you air marshals, how about you guys watch them for us?
Well, it's like the 20 minutes or the time period where somebody isn't in, like, the data networks, right? On a plane, your phone should be on airplane mode and you're, like, thousands of feet from anywhere useful to be, but there's no cameras inside an airplane as far as I know, right?
Yeah, but that's why... Yeah, but that's why they're having...
Yeah, these federal air marshals, yeah.
Yeah, so you're on the plane.
That's super fucked up.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I don't really have... I mean, I feel like this is something, yeah, that we're going to see some egregious abuse of or some court challenge to.
Do you remember when, in the Bush administration, when they came out with all their spying surveillance crap, and it was super huge and scandalous, but that was something like this, like, I assume unwarranted surveillance of American citizens is just kind of like a rates of maybe a C or a B scandal.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what flagged it for me in the first place. Was I'm like, okay, they're surveilling people without a warrant. I mean, they're not searching them although you get searched getting on a plane anyway, which that's a whole other that's another
yeah, show, that's I a guess. Whole other episode.
But but yeah, so I don't know if it's a in this case an explicit constitutional violation, but it does seem to violate the spirit. I would say
like the 14th Amendment.
And yeah, no, I mean, and I agree. Yeah, this is like, I mean, I barely heard about this. Yeah, I think you need. That's what I'm kind of saying, though. I think you need like an egregious abuse. Like it has to be something like they accidentally surveilled like a senator or something like that, or I don't know. They accidentally surveilled like a Trump ally. Then it'll get big attention.
Oh God! They surveyed Brett Baier,
and then we'll find out that it's like no, we were surveilling him because he's a fucking criminal. But yeah. Anyway, all right. So let's move on to another initiative of the government, of our federal government, the Religious Liberty Task Force. I don't think that's the official name of it. I don't think it has an actual name yet.
Seems super willing to call it that, right?
Well, because it's well,
it has nothing to do with religious, well, religious beliefs or liberty.
So
but I guess somebody's religious beliefs.
I mean, it definitely has to do with religion, I guess. Yeah, someone's, as you're saying, someone's. It's not exactly like is this
even the.
Is this like the spirit of the First Amendment, like complete freedom of religion and worship for anyone?
It's not even most Christians.
Yeah. No, the word liberty, this is like one of the fastest tangents we've ever had. The word liberty is like the one of the ultimate Orwellian words that we use, I think, in American politics. Because, so if we're talking, so this case, the idea is, okay, there are Christians out there who are being persecuted because they're a majority, and you know, this is this is protected. I think this is, he actually explicitly brought up the cake case, which the guy kind of won. I mean, I know the ruling was a little complicated, but he kind of won because he was being persecuted by that Colorado state agency. And so,
for being a bigot, I don't understand the problem here.
But I mean, but it's like, so he brings up the case that he got the ruling he wanted, notionally, but we still need this Religious Liberty Task Force. It's probably, this is all like war on Christmas bullshit, too, you know, all that. But, and it's so, I think you and I would read this as this is protecting, like, rural white people, and just in general protecting them and allowing them to be bigots.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so where does liberty... So it's the liberty to take away others' liberty. That's what their use of the word liberty here means.
Well, it's removing the right to not be offended, or you lose the responsibility to not be offended, that is the corollary to the freedom of speech. Like, anyone can say anything, so you can't get offended when somebody says something that you don't like. And they're removing that, so you have the freedom to give, to, shall we say, influence the world around you based on your own personal religious beliefs.
Yeah. So, and I have a feeling this is going to bring in some conflicts between, I think this was actually, we talked about this with the, when we talked about the cake case, the conflict between religious liberty and freedom of speech, and if those are not super overlapping, you know, different kind of constituencies are going to be butting heads.
Yeah, offended.
And this seems to be institutionalizing it for the more religious side in those ensuing battles we will have.
Do we need to read parts of the Constitution again? What does the First Amendment say about establishment of religion?
It's the goddamn first one!
Right, the first one.
You don't even have to have trouble remembering the number.
If it's an important right, it's probably in the First Amendment.
So on Twitter, you brought up that, you know, like, being a different religion than Jeff Sessions, or following a different religion, yeah. like, I don't know, what is...
Well, for me, my dog tag said other when I was in the military, because of my religion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can imagine what how small of a religious following that might have.
Could you see a world in which this is...
Well, I mean, the first thing that springs to my mind is that just like, you know, people, LGBTQ people were denied abort or adoption rights, like, they can just be like, oh, you are not an evangelical Christian family, not a landowning family, so you will never be able to adopt a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that was just off the top of my head. I'm sure they can use that to deny people access to government programs as part of this religious liberty, right?
I mean, it would somehow have to go through a private individual at some point. I think that's the thing. So it's, but, you know, to what extent will they push this? Could it be, this might be a really hyperbolic example, but I'm going to say, let's say I'm like a police officer. And I believe homosexuality is wrong, and I get a call to go to a known homosexual's house because of home invasion, domestic violence or something.
Hmm.
Like I want to say that is ridiculous to think that would ever be a case. That would ever come up as a, not an open and shut case, but,
like, what, a cop pulls up at the curb and there's like the rainbow flag and the flag holder on the front porch at this home invasion?
Well, yeah, it's that logical extreme, which to me is not how you should view policy, government policy, because government moves so slow it rarely gets to the extreme of anything, except for maybe, you know, corporatism. But yeah, we've been working on that for 200 years.
They've been working at that for
even that it probably could be done better, maybe. But
more sustainably, at least.
Yeah, there you go. But to my view of things over the past decade or so in politics is that the right does try and push their policies and beliefs and platforms to the extreme as much as possible. On every level of government, culture, and society.
At what point in the past 10 years have conservatives been like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We should really reconsider our stance on gun rights here.
Yeah, well, it's like the one time they do it, they're like, oh, but wait, they'll vote for that? Oh, okay, go ahead.
They vote for that? Jesus.
Really? Pussy grip. Okay, yeah, go ahead. I approve. So I don't even know how does this have to have like congressional approval to be funded? I don't know
dangerous part of the executive is that they can just do a lot of things like unilaterally, especially the attorney general. Jesus,
but they would have to still divvy up the funds that they already have, right?
Yeah.
I guess that speaks to something then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're taking money away from. Oh, if I had to guess.
Civil rights enforcement, they like reduce that to like one poor guy in like a broom closet, right?
Yeah, like fair housing things and who knows. Yeah, whatever. You know, or enforcing the Voting Rights Act, you know, shit like that. You know, we have all this money left. What?
That went away after that Supreme Court decision.
I know, that's, you know, I know. I'm just, things like that, though. And,
Law enforcement. There we go.
Yeah. Going after, like, bank fraud. And I don't mean, like, fraud defrauding banks. I mean banks defrauding consumers and shit like
that.
Right,
and other corporate fraud related to stocks and investments. And
Yep, all of that. Okay. So
we'll save that for later on.
I bet they're pulling a few mil from all of those programs, and they're going to hire some whack job... you know, some whack job prosecutor who just graduated from fucking Bob Jones or something.
Right, his official photo includes, like, his Klan tattoo or something.
You couldn't have just hidden it. You just couldn't have worn a shirt in your picture. Okay. You know, hey, I'll say this. As an atheist, I'm like... Because, like, one of the things that I like about being an atheist is that I can, when it comes to the government... And, you know, maybe not so much little old me, but, you know, through groups like Freedom From Religion here in Madison, which operates nationally, you know, we can sort of make sure the government isn't picking sides when it comes to religion. Because, you know, atheists, we don't have a side in that. And it's like, this to me, like, it's clearly, like, Jeff Sessions is, like, the most... Christian, conservative, racist senator, former, you know, when he was in the Senate, guy there is. And
most Christian asterisk.
There's no way he's going to do this fairly. There's just no way.
So, everything he's done is like been on his political agenda, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we should take heart in the fact that he's never gotten anything really accomplished.
yeah. Well, yeah. Has he, or?
I mean, he wanted to stamp out marijuana in the free and legal states, but that hasn't happened exactly.
Yeah, I suppose. I feel, though, like these long-term, changing these long-term, like what the focus of these task forces or, you know, interdepartment agencies, whatever, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, he's gutting the institutions that are the bulwarks of democracy.
Because, yeah, so, like, we elect President Liberal McGee in 2020, and they're all about... They're just, like, our first SJW president and all that, okay? And so they want to start... So they want to start doing these, you know. They're like, no, we have to use the Justice Department to, you know, enforce these laws and do these types of cases. People. You won't have people there who are experienced in these cases.
That, on one side, that means we might get some people with new ideas.
True. True. I mean, that is the silver lining of it.
Like, hell, I'd just like it if they started going after, like, the payday loan people.
Yeah, I mean, and you do have to start somewhere for some of these things, but for some of the types of cases that, you know, that has been a mainstay of the department when it comes to, you know,
kind of like counterintelligence work that takes, like, years to do.
Oh, God, I don't even want to. Well, you know, I wonder if things like that you don't even really hear about falling off, in terms of, you know, like the Justice Department and... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Troubling. All right. So, up next is... a couple little bits on Russia we'll round out week thoughts with. So, I saw that 2 days ago... there were, quote, thousands of demonstrators took to the streets in Moscow, chanting such classics as Putin is a thief and away with the Tsar.
Oh, wow, they're really going back for the folk classics.
I like this one. It's classic. Classic PR things when it comes to protests. More than 6,000 people were believed to have attended the protests, according to some a non-governmental organization. But Moscow police put the number closer to 2,500. And it comes because he's trying to raise the retirement age for men from 60 to 65. And, interestingly, women from 55 to 63, making it fair, more equal. Technically, I'm just going to throw that out there.
Wait, the women, their previous mandatory retirement was 65?
No, 55 to 63. for
one. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, that seems fair.
But yeah, people are pissed. They're like, we gotta work 5 more years. I would be pissed too. If I was promised one thing and then they raise that age, like, you shouldn't have promised it in the first place. I'm sorry. Now you have to figure it out.
People our age are gonna have to work until we die.
Well, you know, then at least we should know that before we start. That's all. I mean, that's just, to me, that's just fair. But anyway, so I assume that they are making this policy change proposal of the retirement age, which, by the way, I have heard anecdotally, because I knew this this one woman who was, like, Ukrainian, but for some reason she worked in Russia for a long time, so she was going to get a Russian retirement. But then she went to Moscow, and I heard through the grapevine that they weren't actually paying her, and she was getting screwed, so I don't really know where that story ends. She might just still be hanging out there now.
As far as is that just the corruption of the Russian state?
Or maybe she did get the money, but I don't know. It's not really that important. The main reason I bring that up is because supposedly retirement is good there. It's a good deal for the average worker.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's probably why this is striking a chord.
It'd be like somebody going after Social Security. Of course, there would be thousands of people in the streets.
People would be pissed.
Well, I mean, again, we'll save that for the next segment. But
yeah, I suppose. And so anyway, I assume they're having some funding issues for their government.
Yeah, their government is having some budgetary constraints. Their budget is set for a $75 barrel of oil, and we haven't hit that. We've flirted with it so far this year, but not enough to substantially, like, buttress their economic bottom line.
Well, and it's like, okay, you know, if you hit it once in a while, you know, that's not really getting the job done.
Right.
Like, if you're planning your budgets on it being $75 a barrel, you need it to be that the whole time.
I wonder if this has to do with demographics, too, because they also have a problem with baby boomers, and their demographic curve isn't as gentle as the United States is due to immigration and are ever so slightly... it's all due to immigration. The fact that we have more births.
Oh, us, yes.
Yeah. We have more generation than Russia does, so that they might need to raise their retirement age, because if they let everybody retire, no one will know what to do.
Yeah, because, people aren't moving to Russia, right?
I don't think they encourage it.
I don't know that many people want to. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who are...
Sorry, Edward Snowden.
Well, I don't know that he didn't have the most amount of options.
Yeah.
Well, once he made a fateful decision, I guess he could have not done anything. Just kept living. Where was he? He was in, like, the Bay Area, wasn't he?
I thought he was in Hawaii.
Oh. Really? I didn't know that. How did I not know that? It's not important. That's probably not why.
Important.
So anyway, I also saw this week that this past quarter, Russia's been selling a ton of their holdings of U.S. debt. And the article I saw was kind of like, no one exactly knows why. It's probably not a big deal. A lot of people are making it out to be a big deal because of some sort of, I don't know. I don't even remember what the sky is falling takes were.
well, there's no sky is falling take. I mean, it might be economic warfare on their part. Like, but I can't imagine they would take the hit, like, to take a hit. To really damage us economically, they would have to take a hit and, like, sell those bonds for way below cost to, like, drive the price down and, like, start a panic in that respect. But there's no
they didn't have enough to do that. Yeah,
we haven't had a panic.
I think and China has enough to do more along those lines than Russia.
Yeah, and it's like even then they don't compromise more than like 5% of all the bonds that are out there. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess on the other hand, they need money because their currency against their exchange rate against the dollar has not been very good for a while now. It hasn't been below 50 in years. Yeah. When I checked before the show, it was like 62.5 rubles per dollar. So they're getting starved. Like their entire I won't say their entire economy, but a healthy portion of their economy is built on oil sales. They have a pretty economic picture.
And that's pretty, the article didn't really, I mean, not that they even had enough to really, I think,
identify a cause or a choice.
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem like it was so much money that it would even, like, do Russia, it wouldn't give them so much money that it would last them long, but, you know, when you're poor, it's like, you know, you'll take $10 because that'll get you through the day.
Right, we'll sell some silver. It's fine.
So anyways, that wasn't brought up in the article, and it kind of reading these two stories this past week, it sort of struck me and that they possibly could be related, and a very kind of simple explanation for why why anyone would sell some shit when they're not doing well.
I mean, and this, to my mind, is kind of like the reason that I don't necessarily fear Russia. Like, yes, they try to do something stupid, but their country is way worse off than we are. if we just kick in the sanctions just a little bit more, their entire economy will collapse.
I push back a little bit because, we don't have any. We don't have to fear them because, war. I mean, shit. If anything, we want to keep them just above water so they don't completely collapse. So that people aren't,
fleeing it.
Well, grabbing their nukes and shit, like we were worried about and possibly happened in the early 90s.
This day.
Yeah. And so, or anything like that. Or even, like, really, like, causing too much land war trouble. Like, yeah, they might mess with some of our allies, and then, Yeah, those are troubles, for sure. Those are not good things. But, yes. Not the end of the world. However, I'm ready to just say this, because this is telling me what to think. They did install Donald Trump as president, and that's pretty fucking bad.
They tried. I don't think it mattered, right? There's no way that their memes did that much enough to matter. It was like the underlying decay of our voting system that allowed this to happen.
Well, it's like, I'm not saying we weren't on crutches, hobbling along the sidewalk, but I still think they stuck something in front of us and tripped us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we already were in really, really terrible shape. But I still think, and we don't need to get too much into those factoids, but, I mean, because I feel like saying they didn't put him in as president is like, I mean, they tried to, and what they tried to do happened. So regardless of whether they actually were the ones who did it, I mean, yeah, maybe they just got lucky, for sure. But, I don't know.
It's just kind of semantics.
Yeah, the thing they tried to do, and that result is really terrible for most Americans. And so if that's the way they're going to combat America, maybe next time... Well, this actually is a perfect segue into my next topic that I was just going to throw in here to Weak Thoughts, because it's more about Russia. It's come out in the past, I think, week or so. Microsoft said that Russia tried to hack 3 U.S. midterm candidates that they will not name, though they said they are of intelligence and national security interest, which tells me they're probably sitting congressmen, I'm guessing.
Senators, I would bet, too.
Hmm?
Okay, let me take a look. There's probably some senators too.
It just said sitting. I don't know if I sent this one to you actually. So let me. And then Facebook just yesterday, the day before, said that though they have not determined the source, they have been noticing. Essentially the exact same shit as 2016 going on right now as we speak. Not to a huge, wide degree, but it's definitely happening. And it's the same things that the Russians did, so I don't know. I mean, it's not ridiculous to work from the assumption until you find out otherwise that it's Russia. And I mean, the part that, you know, what's his name? Coates, DNI, has been saying that, you know, the Russians are still doing this shit. So, I mean, so let's say, like, this midterm election is... What if it's, like, overwhelmingly Republican? What if it's a red wave? And then we find out in 2019 that, yep, it's confirmed. The Russians were trying to get all these Republicans elected through all of their contacts, the NRA and blah, 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 and Facebook. Like they're trying to make us a white nationalist state, and it's working.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me. I'm sorry. That terrifies me.
As well, it should.
And but I totally
the people in the country are the ones that we need to worry about, not necessarily the Russians.
Yeah, I mean
they cozy up to fucking right-wing supremacists as convenient fucking foils, but they, people who in the country are the ones we need to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, if you take someone like, this Maria Butina was, right, you know, she's in the news a lot, the Russian spy lady. Yeah, we talked about that. And... But, yeah, okay, so obviously, what's the Dana Loesch or whatever, the NRA lady? So she's probably more influentially terrible than Maria Butina is.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know that there aren't other Russians people doing this, or, you know, Russian agents. We don't know the extent to which, and we may never know the extent to which Torshin and Butina have influenced politicians. Maybe they were really good at some of their things, and they just got caught at some of the things that they messed up.
Yeah, Butina's just like seems like the most public agent that they've been able to pin any of this on.
Yeah, she's like pictures left and right. I mean, what kind of
like all sorts of GOP events?
She's like on TV, and you put a microphone in front of her, she's talking. It's
like, wow.
She's from like the James Bond school of being a spy. She's not like.
Like, yeah, I'm a spy. What?
I don't want to be too alarmist about Russia. Like, in the end, I do agree with you that it's kind of like it's like Mexico with an awesome intelligence agency. But I don't know. That doesn't mean it's not a concern. I mean, there's way shittier countries that we have security concerns about than Russia.
Yeah.
And shittier, I just purely mean economically. I'm not trumping it up. Shithole countries. I just mean like economically they don't have big prosperous governments and giant, you know, like Iran, North Korea, like they're poorer or as poor as Russia.
Poorer probably, but
and they are a concern. I'm not saying we have to like make them out to be Russia circa 1955.
Right.
No, who even Russia then was probably overblown.
I mean, they did launch Sputnik.
Yeah. Maybe more like... Because weren't they actually doing really well in the 50s, and then they hit like a downturn in, was it the 60s or so? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be alarmist, but I don't like the opposite. It's like, no,
right, I'm saying there is room for concern, but this is a counterintelligence matter more than anything. And I mean, yes, it is part of our political system, but again, it's an underlying entry decay in our voting system that allowed any of this to happen.
Yes. Okay. So I think there's like this good middle ground here. So you're kind of saying that politically speaking, our main concern shouldn't be so much Russia, but how Russia was affecting these changes on us. What about us? Type thing.
Yeah. Like, Trump won Wisconsin, right? Is that because of Russia?
Allegedly.
Or is that because 130,000 people got kicked off the rolls, and so with some slight nudging and some, you know, shall we say, well-placed targeted advertising, they were able to keep people home or maybe keep or rile up certain people to get out to vote.
Yeah.
The necessary proportion. And that's part of the problem. Like, the race shouldn't have been that close. Like, we shouldn't have had that many people, like, disenfranchised to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I... I do agree with that. I still, like, I don't know, to me it's like, yeah, it was that close, but that doesn't mean it had to be closer than close to the point where he wins. But yeah, that's splitting hairs. That's it's splitting a few hundred votes here and there, and that's, yeah.
I mean, honestly, the most interesting part of the investigation to me is when they start revealing what Kushner was doing is his like the digital campaign manager doing all that targeted advertising,
Parscale and all that. So, but what the only thing? So, okay, political side, we should look inward. We should be self-reflective more so. However, you're saying there's a counterintelligence problem matter, which is, you know, not really for like average people to worry about so much.
Right. There were spies meeting with senators. What the fuck? Yes. Come on, FBI. Where are you on this?
And so that's where I'm kind of going with this. So like there may be another nexus though to all of this, which is like, look at what they're doing to the there is a counterintelligence look at this that's going on. Not some, like, we know that they're actively doing things, but like the Mueller investigation at its core is a counterintelligence investigation looking at what happened. But look at how the Republicans who have possibly been in, compromised, some of them, Rohrabacher, I mean, we don't know.
I mean, maybe.
Like, there's a lot of definite maybes going on around them. And now they have oversight. They have the presidency. They have
Putin's money. Raise your hands.
I mean, it's just that it's. Yes, I agree. Like, it's maybe hard. Like, looking back on what happened, even from this kind of more rigorous counterintelligence, is still like, okay, but what does America do going forward?
Paper ballots.
Yeah, that might be. Hey, still get people to. It still doesn't. I mean, that affects some things, but it still doesn't get those 130,000 people registered.
Yeah, automatic registration, voting holiday. There's some things that you could do,
but we can't do that if
without having cooperation from
Well, or even just voting the shithead Republicans out of office. But, you know, until that happens,
I'll see you in November.
I don't know. Like, that's kind of why I think it's not super ridiculous to, like, put some hopes onto, like, the Mueller investigation. Like, I'm by no means not trying to push it to, like, this, like, Mueller's going to indict Trump, and then the entire cabinet and all those judges will be removed, or, you know, anything like that. I'm not saying anything like that. But his work is important because it's a mostly independent operation that's going on that is not being, like, it's not having constant public scrutiny on it. Because right now we're kind of tainted as the public, and it's not beholden to, in general, the whims of the wacko Republican right that has tied in with guns and Russians. It's like the fucking Warren Zevon song. You know that one, Lawyers, Guns, and Money?
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a great song. Maybe I'll play it as the outro to this segment. All right, well, my ranting about Russia's done. I'll let you rant about taxes in the next segment.
Oh, fun.
Okay. All right, we'll be back in a couple weeks.
In a musical interlude.
Yeah, I don't promise Warren Zevon. I'll have to give him a call and see if we can use it.
How was I to know? horse and a hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Well, I'm down on my luck. I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
The GOP what do they call their tax bill from last year? Do they have a name for it? The Tax Happy Rainbow Act of 2017 or something?
Rainbows and Prosperity Act.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, not rainbows. We're saying sick, damn it.
Oh, yeah. Just be the red, white, and blue Prosperity Act. I don't know. Anyway, the GOP tax scam is what we refer to it around here. And there were just a few news stories that came up that kind of got me to think about it. I'll start with just the most tertiary, and then we'll move into the other two. And that is earlier this week. I think Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury,
he announced it in like a fucking interview.
He was giving like an interview like on the sides of some conference or something, and he like dropped it in there. But it's one of those things where like it's like a leak in the sense that they're not making a big hoopla song and dance about it.
It's not even a leak. It's more of a signal to the people who would matter, or you know, who have like Google alerts about fucking carried interest rates.
Well, and I think, and to see, to gauge, yeah, it gave the reaction of those people, but also to gauge, like, okay, are we going to get, you know, burned alive for this? Are they going to let us get away with it?
Is it pitchforks and guillotines? No? Okay.
it's a go, boys. And so this is where they, H.W. tried to do this in, like, 1992, and his administration, which... I don't know who the Secretary of the Treasury was at the time. Might not have been a loony bin. But there were a lot of what we used to think of as the Republican loonies in his administration.
Yeah.
And even they were like, no, we can't get away with this. This will never work.
Yeah, we can't like redefine words that Congress is like defined.
Well, so but in the article, in the New York Times article that talks about how the Treasury Department is going to try to do a capital gains tax cut that's about $100 billion to, you know, 98%. Like 98% of the people getting them are super wealthy people.
At least in the 1%.
I think it said 10% in the article, but still the 10% is like...
But dude, still, how many people have capital gains taxes?
So I don't know. It's... I'll say that there's this line of thinking though that the real separation of wealth is actually top 10%, not so much 1%. Like yeah, the 1% that's crazy. They have a ton, but there's still like this 10% that are. It's like you can like most people in power are in that 10%, not so much that 1%. Because there's obviously powerful people who aren't in the top 1%.
Yeah, and Jeff Sessions, we read through his financial disclosures. He is very well invested, but he is not rich.
He's not. Okay. Yeah. Yes. And anyway, so they're trying to do this thing, and it would be the reason it's a big deal is because it's not it's a tax thing that's not going through Congress, which is kind of the most fundamental thing Congress does.
Right.
Which is why it makes total sense for someone to try to do this, because Congress has been abdicating their power left and right for, like...
decades.
Yeah, it's a decade. I don't...
Like, since 9/11, so, yeah,
at least then.
There's
a little bit of, like, the, like, Civil War...
Oh, and let's not forget, like, the national security state after World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a huge abdication.
Yes. And so, actually, some of the weird shit Trump's doing with, like, these tariffs, aren't those from, like, laws, like, post-World War or during the World Wars?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Back in the day, as it were. When America was, I guess, great.
Well, I think the idea is that they were, like, you know, like, when you are involved in World Wars and that's like your worst case situation, like you're kind of like, okay, maybe we should do these extreme things.
Yeah, I guess tariffs don't seem so extreme.
But then the idea that we should be using now is like we should be spending like, you know, or we spent like 70 years trying to prevent world wars. And so, you know, we should enjoy the freedoms and prosperity associated with all of that work. And you know, like we're not in a world war right now. I don't know. I'm getting off topic.
Sorry, I should have knocked on the table.
No, that was an appropriate knock. That was like a, what was that, who was the Russian guy who was, Khrushchev banging on the podium there? Excuse me. Anyway. So, the reason I bring it, put it into this segment is because it seems like they are, it's just more of the same of the tax scam.
Yeah.
It's like the one thing they didn't get in there.
Yeah, it's like, well, we got away with that with seemingly no penalty. Can we go further?
Huh? Yeah.
So carried interest?
Yeah.
Or not capital gains interest? Huh? Or not even interest, like the inflation on capital gains.
Yeah, so and I think the last thing I'll say on that is that they think they quoted Grover Norquist in the article, of course, who said that it was like in 2004 there was a Supreme Court case. It was like Verizon versus someone. I suppose I should actually bring it up and check. But anyways, where they talked about a government regulation, a regulatory agency being able to determine the definition of the word cost to them. Mm. And so he's trying to cite that. Even though these people are obviously, you know, super against... Well, they're super against, you know, government regulation, but, you know, when it benefits them.
They can use that law book just as well as anybody,
which is how kind of politics in a way is supposed to be. But when everything gets so fucked up like it is in our system, you know, people take advantage.
I wish this person would stop squealing their tires though.
Yeah, they're just sitting outside your window doing that.
It's seeming like they're just going around a block, like around my house almost.
Oh, I had one of those last night. It was weird. Must be a thing. It's a new Wisconsin thing. So anyways, the 2002 Supreme Court decision in a case between Verizon and the FCC, just for any of our legal nerds out there who want to see people arguing over the definition of the word cost. And so can you tell us, Bloomberg had a nice opinion article about some of the data coming in on the tax scam. Can you go over some of that? Because the numbers, I don't do well with the numbers.
Let me pull it up so I know what I'm talking about. The tax scam was just so poorly planned out that there's no way that it could be said to be economic stimulus. I think I talked about this in the last podcast or some length, but it's just fucking terrible. Let's see. Here's real average hourly compensation, which is indexed to 2009 and apparently has gone down in the past year. Right. Okay. So the tax scam was passed in 2017, if memory serves.
Yeah, late 2017.
Okay. So hourly wages, changes in real wages. What was that? Gone down. Almost 2 full percentage points. Jesus. Like, and this is just the net change. Like people's wages have been going down for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past quarter, like basically the first full quarter that we've had the GOP tax scam in effect, the corporations are now spending even less on outlays on personnel than they were before. And part of this is that they don't need them anymore. I mean, robots and automation are, I guess, a thing, but I don't necessarily fear the future because the shitty robots subreddit exists. Things like, for instance, the real estate market, I don't know about the rest of the country, but here in Wisconsin, is super duper hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, houses are barely even sitting on the market, and they're just getting snapped up like for nothing.
Yep.
That's not necessarily a good sign.
So you don't want that to be too fast or too slow?
I would. Well, okay, so this brings me to the next graphic in the Bloomberg article, mm-hmm. the non-residential fixed investment as a share of gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, God. I love you. And that has gone up. We don't necessarily want, like, housing to be one of, yeah, the reason that people are making money. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, in some part, why things went south in 2008.
Yeah.
And this is just setting the same kind of, shall we say, fertile ground for it. Yeah, real domestic product growth per capita is almost at zero. So, as even the Bloomberg cites, the tepid rate of growth means the tax cut is unlikely to pay for itself. Because, real economists know and have known for some time that tax cuts do not actually encourage economic growth by themselves. It is all about incentive shaping, like pushing money to a new productive or notionally productive outcome.
Yeah, and that to me was the most interesting part of this. Let's cite the author here to be Noah Smith.
I think we've mentioned him before.
Really? Oh. As I've already said, I'm terrible with the names. Lucky I didn't mispronounce Smith. But anyway, but this idea that, like, there have already been so many examples of tax cuts, you know, of this kind, of that kind, and this kind of economy not leading to stimulus, that it's like this might be the kind of, like, last nail in that coffin of, no, it just really is not something for our economy that will work, that will do what they promise it will do.
Absolutely not. And especially the way they did it, which led to seeing stock buyback programs. Like, what was it, over $100 billion so far have been in stock, has just been bought in cash from companies that, from the windfall returns of the stock or tax scam.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like they think that simply just, you just put any money into people's hands, it'll automatically lead to, I don't even know what. What do they think it will exactly lead to? Investment in
new
businesses? Or
productive investment? I mean, what kind of need would that investment be trying to, you know, satisfy? Because people don't, like, just invest money because, I don't know.
Because sometimes people are like, sweet, I just get a bunch of money. And then they're perfectly fine just having more money. Just sitting there, you know, like, so that they can dive into it, right? Like, isn't that what they do?
I mean, what more productive investment could there, I don't know. I could think of more productive investments, but typically it's not just putting money into the hands of people who are known to hoard money like some people hoard newspapers.
Well, and it's like so many of the good things that could be done for society are best done by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just something that simple is what I just said is not said by Democrats enough, or Republicans, I guess, but Democrats enough.
Right. Just any politician.
It's like you don't even get them to, like, it's like it's hard for them to even, like, admit, like, the very obvious things are better done by the government, but then sometimes there's things that, you know, like, I don't even know what, I don't
roads?
Know. Yeah. I mean, there's, like, some things that just, like, roads.
The interstate system.
You know, maybe these things are just better run. Universities. How about that one?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get openly talked about enough. We kind of just, like, we sort of, like, kind of like our public universities, but then sometimes they cause political turmoil, and then there's always fucking Harvard sitting over there all private and shit, being like, we're Harvard and we're the best, so, like, private's the best. But, like, most people who get good educations in this country, I feel confident saying probably went to public universities.
right, UW-Madison.
And, you know, like California has a very famously big but good system.
In New York, too.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, and then let's finish up with something.
No, we added that other thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Or no, we'll go talk about Mulvaney.
Yeah, that's
we'll
what I was going to go to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we've pretty much been saying this from the beginning, so when I saw this, I'm like, yes, of course that happened. That's exactly what we would say would happen.
Didn't I predict this?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. So, that what I love about this article is that it's even, like, worse than... Okay, so, when they were doing this thing, the tax scam... Like, all the administration and Paul Ryan's and all them were like, you know, this will pay for itself, right? Because we're going to have blah, blah percent growth and this and that and all the taxes and the taxes that we'll make, even though, you know, they would just cut the taxes if they made too much from them. But anyway, and they said that, you know, like, we won't have a budget deficit because of this. It'll actually be a budget positive because, remember, they were doing all those, like, counting monies twice?
Mm-hmm.
In their math.
So, oh, right. Because they couldn't even do basic arithmetic.
Oh, yeah, no, it was like, they counted, like, it was like 400 billion twice in their thing. And anyway, so this the Congressional Budget Office, which Mulvaney, who is the head of the Office of Management and Budget for the White House, has said that the Congressional Budget Office, who has said this will be a deficit the whole time, or will increase the deficit this whole time, said, you know, he's like called them partisan and blah, 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 blah. So his office then came out with one that actually had a bigger deficit that we would be expecting because of this. So it's even worse than the CBO said. And that pretty much completely fits in line with what you have been saying, which is that they will use the increase in the deficit to lead to spending cuts.
Yeah, and now he wants to start hacking at the budget like,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jason at a cyber cave.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, treating the budget like it's a virgin teen. At a summer camp.
Okay. I was just gonna say, I'm slightly less comfortable with this metaphor. So
isn't that? I've never seen any of those movies. That's what I thought. I thought it was always like, or maybe it's the teens that have sex get killed. I'm trying to remember the rules from Scream. I've only seen Scream.
I don't think it is a sexually active teens that die.
Oh, it's not.
No, it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I not really a fan of horror movies. Mm-hmm. When there's so much horror in the world. Why do I need to go to the movies?
Yeah, what more horror do you need?
Just okay, like just read the local news in Cleveland and you'll be mortified. Jesus,
right? This is that's happening in America. But let's talk the last point I wanted to bring up about mm-hmm. this and how it's cutting government revenues in very serious and real ways is that Mattis, Defense Secretary Mattis, is now having to adjust the carrier deployments to accommodate, shall we say, the new revenue and new realities of the federal government. Hmm. So, you know, ships will be deployed less, and this might impact our national security in some measurable ways.
So... So that was done. So I guess I didn't. So that was done to decrease spending,
right?
Okay.
Well, because you know the military budget can only be so high, and yeah, it seems like they're spending a lot of money over there. I'm going to bet, and just like you know your good old fashioned military industrial state complex corruption, but yeah, they're just bleeding money.
How is that? Because I mean, no, I mean this does tie into. I didn't see this as a direct correlation, but well, first let's just say the maddest thing was that the reason I didn't quite get that it was going to be fewer deployments is that the idea is that the deployments will be secret and not random, but not like publicly scheduled beforehand. But yeah, it would make sense that they'd also just do fewer. Which, I mean, on the surface makes a little bit of sense that it's like, you know, it's like, hey, you don't know when the Fifth Fleet will show up, but they could show up at any time, and they are still the Fifth Fleet, and they still have a lot of firepower, so watch out. I mean,
remember, the Defense Department doesn't even need to say shit. There are so many hobbyists and enthusiasts out there that you can search Twitter and find out where the Fifth Fleet is at any given moment.
That's true, yeah.
So it doesn't, yeah. It's purely a cost-cutting measure, and it's because Mulvaney's like, hey, guess what? We may have broken the budget, and there's not any more money in it other than to pay off interest on our debt and apparently to continue to have a military, judging from our spending priorities.
Yeah. But now they just got a ton more money. That's kind of a little confusing to me. The military... Yeah,
it's another part. Well, because a lot of it's being eaten by the F-35 program. The F-22 programs.
Okay, so...
And now, like, they want new light tactical attack aircraft, too.
Huh. Because it's interesting to me that the U.S. military can't afford to... I mean, I guess you cut money wherever you think you can get away with it without it affecting performance and results. But, mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that they'd feel so compelled to do that after already having, like, a huge percentage of our national budget put into them, and that having been increased recently above and beyond what anybody even hoped for. Like, everyone's like, it should be this much more. And then it's like they all got together and it, like, cumulatively built upon itself, and it was, like, all of a sudden... Billions more.
$60 billion more? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but it strikes me that, because, like, we don't, I mean, the amount of operations we have going on in Iraq and Afghanistan are, you know, less so than they were, what, 10 years ago, right?
Sure. Actually.
And so that should mean less money is being spent, you'd think.
Or probably about the same, if I had to bet. But yeah, less overall.
You'd hope less money, but yeah, that's what I'm kind of saying. Like, maybe that's where some of the problems are. But it's like, what if we do need? I mean, like, what if not even we need to, but like, you know, our crazy president thinks we need to go to war with whoever. Like, can we afford that? And I'm going to guess they're going to say we can't, so we need to cut more. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. like the what you're alluding to now going on with the budget and all their shady tricks will all of a sudden get magnified and intensified if there is some sort of foreign military excursion.
Yeah, if there's like or some kind of real domestic problem, like, I don't know, a couple of hurricanes hit the Gulf Coast or something.
It'll be called the Austerity Expedition Force. yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, and yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure where this is going, but the shake of the eight ball wouldn't be optimistic, you know?
yeah. No, and I don't know where it's. I mean, so before you brought in the military thing. I mean, to me, and this has been the plan, I mean, it's like, I think Ryan all but overtly said this last year, which is, yeah, we're going to cut taxes and then say we can't afford Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what's to be expected as soon as they can get away with it. Don't know if that'll be, it doesn't seem like that'll be this year. Although that tax bill made its way through Congress somewhat fast once it got going. I mean, that was right. The one where they were writing on the margins, right?
Yeah. John Tester like, showed that, had that video where he was like, look at the notes in the margin. This is law now. I can't read this, can you?
So, I mean, you know, presumably that's how they're going to. It's just with the Kavanaugh thing going on, there's going to be so much heat on them that, I don't know, maybe you use it for a distraction, but maybe it just means that you can't get away with it. I don't know. By the way, the fact that I'm saying something like trying to get away with these things, Social Security and Medicare are popular programs. A majority of Americans like them.
And believe that more people should have access to them.
And the fact that then there's elements of the, like, the Speaker of the House, who should be one of the most democratically representative figures in the federal government. Like, actually, I guess because there's a step between him and the people, maybe the president, you could argue, is more. But, like, the Speaker of the House, man, he's the Speaker of the people. That's what that's supposed to be.
Right.
And, you know, it's in the lower house, too, you know.
The most more populist house, notionally.
Yeah. But then, you know, gerrymandering and all that shit. So, you know, we've had some issues. But then he's sitting here, like, he wants to get away rid of this program that if you put up a referendum, a national referendum on them, they would win. Easily, I think.
Yeah, I assume, right? If you put, like, Medicare for all of, in a, like, vote across the country, you'd probably win.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I'm not even... I'm just saying how it is right now.
Mm.
Like, how, at minimum. How it is right now, at minimum. You could maybe go more later, but this is the minimum.
It's tough to argue with healthcare. It's really tough to argue with healthcare for poor people and disabled people. I don't know. Yeah. It's not a winning political strategy, because... So shall we say they're a really sympathetic group of people.
Yeah. Or like you pay into this program for your retirement your whole life and then you should get money from that program. Like,
I mean, you guys put all your money in your investment programs, your 401ks, and then get money from it.
You know a group that will turn that will stop being Republican really fucking fast if Paul Ryan tried to just like completely fuck up Social Security? Would be like people my mom's age who are like seconds away from getting Social Security.
Oh yeah, they'll suddenly become hashtag resistors.
Those people would be out wearing like Antifa masks and shit.
Like finally, some direct action.
Yeah, old people like firebombing the White House, and oh man, it'll be bad. All right, you good on this?
Yeah, that seems like a good place to close it.
I feel like...
No, we're not actually advocating firebombing the White House or any kind of direct action lead to property destruction or damage to health and human property.
Yeah. No, but I'm actually probably not going to say what you think I'm going to say. But okay. I am, if I were to be advising Paul Ryan... I would say do not gut Social Security and Medicare because that might happen.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All right. So we have some closing thoughts here. Let's do some updates on past topics of the show. A couple days ago, they held elections in...
Yesterday.
That was yesterday.
In Zimbabwe.
Although by now, maybe it'd be a couple days ago. It's 3 days ago by the time people are hearing this. So as of this recording, the opposition party says they have the lead. Sounds like both are kind of saying they have the lead. There's something about what's a prosecution warning? Someone's reporting that Zimbabwe issues prosecution warning after opposition claims poll win.
Oh, that means that's announcing your counter-revolutionary intention.
Hmm.
You guys are absolutely not going to win, but we'll see how this all plays
out.
So
we'll probably talk about this next week or the week after, see what happens there.
Here's a statement. The Home Affairs Minister, Obert Mpofu, said those who violate election rules by prematurely declaring victory risk incurring, quote, the wrath of the law, unquote.
Hmm.
That's what that is.
Interesting. On one hand, makes sense to me. On the other hand, it could be abused by the party in power quite easily.
Like, holy fascist, man.
Yeah. But I get it, though. Like, some group claiming they won, you know, or some candidate claiming they won when results are not in all the way. You know, I could see that causing trouble in and of itself. It's sort of like a bit of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there was just a quick thing about Sinclair, which we talked about, I think, the last episode I was on, two episodes ago, and it's just that Trump was tweeting about how he wasn't happy with that ruling that we discussed. And then apparently some of the people involved were like, why won't the president just shut up about this? he's hurting the cause. Our nefarious cause. And so, I don't know, I guess that doesn't surprise me that Trump would just overtly say such things. But he kind of, like, shines a light on how it was bullshit to start, I think.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say something about political spending, but I feel like all those words have already been said in so many ways about this. Like, Sinclair is just trying to swallow our government, or at least our civil society, and Trump's trying to push it, so...
You know, I haven't really... I think this might be what you're, like, pushing towards, and I don't really hear this overtly said, which is... One of the ways in which you can bypass our like election spending rules and laws is by just having a media organization that uses ad revenue from people to propagate political speech.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's like should be illegal or anything. I mean, freedom of speech and all that, but. It's something maybe people should be more overtly conscious of. And I guess people are, except for the people who actually watch Fox News.
Hmm.
I don't know.
They're the most conscious of it, which is the whole idea behind the religious liberty discourse.
No, that's true.
Bring it back.
I don't know that the Sinclair people were. Like, that was kind of the idea of that segment we did, is that, you know, Sinclair is getting into people's homes pushing this political speech on just old people who are trying to figure out who won, like, the high school game and stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Did the high school win tonight? I guess I still hate Hillary Clinton. No,
yeah, now that you bring it up. All right, and then a couple... Oh, wait, no. I want to talk... Well, let's do the Wisconsin stuff first, because I'm really interested in the last thing there. But anyway, Wisconsin, a couple things. One, there has been some polling finally coming out on the Senate and the governor's races here, and Republicans are doing poorly. But, you know, they were doing poorly... earlier in 2016, too, so, you know, don't go planning your vacation around the time of the election day and then not voting or anything for the Democrats in Wisconsin, I guess, and the anti-Republican coalition. But I don't know, what are your thoughts about...
The network is only active in 4 states so far for Senate. Campaign. Interesting. Wisconsin is one of them, though. Wait, who do they endorse in Wisconsin? Did they pick Buckmeyer or Nicholson?
Nicholson. So the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity are. They had a meeting recently with a bunch of their donors, and they are apparently stepping back a bit from some Republican races, and they have only. So far, been involved in a few. One of them is in Wisconsin. I think it is for Vukmir, but I'm not sure.
So the more extreme of the candidate.
Well, and... Oh, there's the dog. And Walker, I assume, right?
Why would they, man? Well, no, they're not stepping back from him. I understand.
No, that's what, like, I'm saying. It's like he's someone that they are, like, they are involved in.
Yeah, they have to be, or else he's just going to get swept away by generic Democratic candidate.
Also guessing, it didn't bring it up in this political article about it, but I'm guessing they will be involved in congressional races like the 1st District. I bet they will back Paul Ryan's successor on the Republican side.
Ryan style. Isn't there a woman candidate who we haven't profiled yet?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
actually, isn't the Democratic... Aren't the primaries next week?
Yeah, they're coming up on the 14th.
Oh, 14th. So it's fine. We should talk about them next week, then.
Yeah, next week we'll have to have a deep dive into the primaries.
Yeah, because some of those will be interesting. But anyway, so Walker's losing the polls. As you've said numerous times, that he's going to need to outspend his opposition by 10 to win, which he maybe could do.
And I don't think any of the Democrats could overcome, like, it'll be tough for the Democrat candidate to overcome that.
Yes.
And if Soglin were the one who would gets beyond the primary, that would pretty much doom the Democrat in the race. That would doom, like,
He's not. It's going to be probably Evers.
What? No, it's going to be Malin Mitchell, right?
No.
I mean, I see way more of his signs around here in Beloit than I see anybody else's. Yeah.
Interesting.
I've seen a couple of Kathleen Vinehout, but hardly any Kelda Royce, which I find surprising.
Well, I mean, so a poll came out with Tony Evers having a fairly big lead in the primary for the Democratic nomination. But, you know... That's one of those things that once people actually go to the polls in a, or, you know, do their research, like, the day of voting.
It's like, wait, why am I voting for this guy?
Things could change.
Tony Evers is a pretty good pick, but I think we could do better.
I would be decently happy with him. Personally, I'm going between him, Vinehout, and Royce.
All right, well, let's save any more speculation for next week.
And, okay. We'll save it.
I heard that statement. Let's leave it at that.
But that's still pretty broad, and I could be convinced otherwise, by the way. And then the last bit is,
one of Paul Nalen's staffers was a white supremacist? Oh my God, don't, no. Well,
so I just love that. Okay. So in my facts are correct that the I think he's leading as the Republican. No, he won the primary, right? The neo-Nazi guy in Virginia already won their primary. I think he is the Republican candidate, Corey Stewart.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he won. If not, he's, like, the main contender for the nomination, and it hasn't happened yet. The language here makes me think that he already won. So, anyway.
What's his connection to Malin?
So he's getting some heat for being, like, he's, like, super... He has, like, all these ties with neo-Confederate groups. He quote, his refusal to condemn white supremacist violence.
Wow.
And so he's, you know, because he's a politician, he's putting together a staff. And so he had the brilliant idea to one of his staff members used to work for the... It had to be a super small campaign. Paul Nalen has run a insurgent, far-right-wing, hate-filled... I think he ran for the primary against Ryan once, and he's, I think, technically running this time... Although he's faded real fast in terms of
prominence. He's not getting Breitbart anymore, so...
Yeah, Breitbart abandoned him, so... So he couldn't have had a big staff. Like, he just couldn't have. And they probably were all racists and anti-Semites.
I mean, you have to know what that guy's about, just even...
Oh, yeah. And so, this guy in Virginia is like, oh, I need someone on that guy's staff. And so, or, you know, he saw that on the resume. He's like, oh, you're hired.
Like, it's, oh, you don't like anybody else but white people. Well, you came to the right.
And this guy has tweeted, like, a bunch of disparaging things about black people over the years. It's pretty revolting. But the one that gets me, that I could easily probably rant here for a while, is that the guy said, essentially, predominantly black cities, and I think he pointed out, I'm trying to look for it in the article, but
it's Memphis, New Orleans, and Baltimore.
Memphis, yeah. Baltimore, New Orleans are shithole cities, I guess, because they're predominantly black, is the logic here.
I would think he would include Milwaukee in that categorization.
Well, I'm sure he'd include a lot of cities in this, but those are the ones that, for whatever reason, he was focusing on. And, like, in my opinion, like, okay, this is going to get broad quick, but, like, one of the things I hate about this, like, blood and soil, like, American culture is white, you know, Anglo WASP culture and all that, is that that is, like, it's so not true. And the amount of influence those people have on what we think of as American culture is actually smaller than they have been over the generations. And, like, so many minority groups have had this outsized influence on the culture, mostly black people. I mean, from food to, I mean, God damn it, music? All American music is black music.
Yeah, almost all of it.
Blues, ragtime, jazz, rock and roll, hip hop, R&B.
Yeah.
That's all black music. And like, I mean, and look at these cities. Like, it's like, you know, Memphis, I mean, has had this, like, incredible, influence on the culture with music and food. I mean, New Orleans, God, I mean, come on. And it just, like, to diminish them as shithole because of the race of people who have been there is just so, I mean, even beyond, like, the social, like, economic reasons that it's obviously an incredibly stupid comment. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just can't, I just hate these people who probably, it's like, you know, they probably go, it's like, you know, remember when Paul Ryan was running for vice president and he said his favorite album or his favorite musical artist was Rage Against the Machine? Mm-hmm. It's like, that's what this is. Like, this person probably fucking gets in his car and turns on, like, I'm trying to think, a Masta P album or something like that. And then he calls New Orleans a shithole country. Or shithole city, sorry. And then for this person to be running, like, a staffer for someone who's running for Senate. Senate! This is like Roy Moore level terrible.
Yeah. At least in scope. Maybe not in scale.
Well, we'll, I mean, see, yes, the scale part. For
Senate, but the notion, I mean, Corey Stewart probably isn't a child molester. He's not necessarily that evil.
Yeah, right? I mean, he seems more overtly racist than
Roy Moore, but I can't say that.
Nobody, I mean, let me say this. When Roy Moore was running, it was like, oh, he's sort of like dog whistles about being a neo-Confederate, and this guy's just like, nah, I got ties. Yeah.
Isn't this the guy who was, like, in pictures with, like, the Proud Boys and Marvin McGinnis and all those crazy people?
I don't know for sure, so I don't want to, like, confirm that. But so. What I have read about him, yes, seems like that's yes.
That's his circle of friends.
And yeah, man, I just hate the white people. Like, I don't know. I was listening a lot today about, like, demographic change and shit in the country. And it just, like, what I can't get over is, like, you can talk so, like, academically about it, and politically about whose votes and coalitions and blah, and what's the definition of white? Do these people, are they considered white? And
it's like the epitome of privilege, right?
What, being called white?
Well, literally, the privilege of inheriting that kind of, even the style of argumentation.
Oh, yeah, probably. Probably. Yeah. Although I think that, luckily, unless you actively try to ignore it, there are a lot of people who are, like, people of color involved in those conversations.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I see it on Twitter. Like, I follow a lot of people who do talk in those terms and tones. But it just to me, it just ignores, like, this, it's like, how could, I'm sorry, I can't, like, I get, like, being the kind of racist where, like, I'm not saying it's, like, good, but, like, I get being the kind of racist who's, like, you know, afraid to drive into the black neighborhood, or, like, crosses the street type. You know, or like you're sitting in a car, like, I don't know, like, I get that type of thing, like your personal safety type fear. Because to me, that's like probably like the last stand of racism. Because, you know, it's your body. Like, you might be a little crazy if you're trying to protect your body. Like, I get it. It's not good, but I get it. But like this culture war idea that they're pushing, this culture, who wants to live in a white culture America? Like, that's not fun. There's no music. There's no goddamn dancing. The food sucks.
God, the food would just be terrible, right?
There's no, like, half the comedians are boring shit. Like, who wants to live in that country? Those people don't want to live in that country. They just want to feel better than someone else. That's all it is. They just want to, they just feel shitty about themselves, and they want to feel better than, like, people, and so it's just easy, because they're ignorant, to pick the people with darker skin as, like, their dividing line. And it's, if they actually thought through, I'm not even talking about being good, like, or a loving person. I'm taking, like, good out of it. Just practically speaking, they don't want to live in that country. And fucking bullshit to try and, like, to speak in these terms. I don't remember hearing terms like this. Like, there's a lot of racism when we were younger, but did people talk like this? Like, David Duke was it, and he was considered, like, the most fringe person.
Right? He was an extremist even then. Like, and, the extreme of
and now there's, like, dozens of people as prominent as David Duke ever was. Well, maybe not ever was. Yeah, I think maybe ever was. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, we do have Trump in the White House, so everything's up
for
grabs.
We'll see what happens.
But it's like there's all these, because I think because of social media, they get more of a platform. Their names are a little bit more known. You know, they're doing this, holding these rallies in Charlottesville and all this. It's like, what are they actually advocating for? Like, what are they actually advocating for that anyone wants? Why are we giving them any time of day, any air to breathe? It doesn't,
it doesn't make any sense.
And, like, and because I think it's because, I mean, I yeah, so, like, what I said about them wanting to feel better than people, I still don't quite get why, like, they're not, because I remember, like, David Duke would be, like, made fun of, like, constantly on TV and shit. Like, he was demonized and ridiculed, and that's the only terms you ever heard him talked about.
Yeah, he was never even given, like, a respectful place on any television show. He just started off by, like, this guy's a racist.
Yeah, and he was a joke. Even, like, kind of, like, racist white guy privileged comedians, like, he was still, like, a joke, because he was advocating this kind of culture of whiteness, which is preposterous. And white people should fight as hard as they can for there not to be a culture in which they dominate. I'm sorry. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess end rant.
Yeah, I don't know where we go.
Oh, just what, it's just, but then you see people, like, they don't like, you know, who are some of these like whack jobs, like Spencer, that Spencer guy and all them. It's like, well, I don't like them, but we should like get into what they think, or maybe it's really economic anxiety or fucking whatever, you know, give them a write up in the Times. Bullshit.
Who cares about these Trump voters? I don't need to know, like, that racists go to grocery stores or whatever.
And especially the worst of the worst Trump voters.
Right?
Like, okay.
Everybody mentioned in that article lost their jobs.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, yeah. Yeah, I think the Trump voter that maybe, like, voted for Obama or maybe even the people
have some serious explanations. Why?
Every time I think of that, and I'm not even sure this person I'm about to reference would do that, because it's a fictional character, but every time I hear about the Obama-Trump voter, it immediately pops into my head the dad from Get Out, who's like, I voted for Obama twice, and I would have a third time if I could. and every time I just hear the term Obama Trump voter, because you know you hear it a lot. If you're like me, a savvy political observer, and yeah, that's all I think. I just picture a character from a movie who's like the definition of like two-faced racist to me. Anyways, so I think we have something that we can kind of follow up or end with. That's a little bit. Probably a little bit brighter, although it's a little confounding to me. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the young Democratic Socialist candidate for U.S. Congress, she won the Democratic primary, knocking off a entrenched establishment Democrat we've talked about before on the show. And we talked about kind of her... I don't even want to say her versus the establishment Democrats, but kind of establishment Democrat comments about her. And I've noticed in the past couple weeks, the right wingers are just like, they're going nuts about her.
Yeah. Like nuts. Like I think the sky is falling. That's why Comey even was like, I put out the statement that the Democrats need to be more centrist.
Was that about her? Is that what that was?
Basically, yeah.
God, dude, turn off the Fox News, man. You're vilified on that channel. Stop it.
Dude, Comey, just go away. Stop trying to interfere in our political...
Just stay out of one election.
We just have one election.
Like, I'm pretty certain that he interfered with.
I mean, kind of, right?
Oh yeah,
we already covered that in a previous episode.
Well, I mean, what are you referring to before 2016?
Wait, what?
Oh no, I'm saying Comey already interfered in the 2016 election. He should not be commenting on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're in agreement. Okay. I thought you were implying he interfered in ones before that.
No, I mean, only broadly is in his role as Deputy Attorney General and maybe FBI Director, but that's like postulating at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't like he didn't make public comments that statistical observers have said was the defining change in the election.
Yeah, not this year.
Yeah. So anyway, and so like what's some of the stuff I've seen? There was a National Review opinion hit piece. I think I saw her when I was at a diner in northern Wisconsin, like just plastered all over like Fox News. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but you could see the things on the bottom. And it was like, you know, like, is she crazy or the craziest or something like that? I don't know.
She is the craziest. You guys need to be entirely afraid.
Well, that's what it seems like, right? Doesn't that, like, on the surface, that's what, I don't know if there's any reason to look into it deeper. It seems like they are extremely afraid of there being a successful populist left-wing movement.
Well, again, fascism is a reaction to left-wing movements, right? At its base.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, it seems like they're trying to, like, nip this. You know, thinking back to 2016 and Bernie Sanders, which I think there are obvious similarities, right?
Sure.
Obvious,
he was one of his organizers.
Yeah, some obvious differences, just a couple, but also similarities.
She's from a different borough of New York, for example.
And thinking back to talking to, like, my parents about, and, you know, other older conservatives I know about the Democrats, that, you know, they're generally dismissive of Democrats. Or, you know, they don't like them, I should say. But they would be, like dismissive of Bernie. Like on one hand, they'd kind of do the thing of, like, you should be really upset. Like, once things were more said and done, like, you should be really upset. Hillary did blah, blah, blah to Bernie. But then they'd be like, Bernie's the, like, politically, he's the worst. His ideas are the worst. Like, they genuinely hate, and as you would expect, I guess, they genuinely hated his politics more than Hillary's.
Yeah, of course they did.
And they were really dismissive. They thought it was ridiculous, though. But there's a bit of fear I pick up in it. And that's all I see in this. Is they're doing, they I don't even want to say anything they can. They're just trying to make it, take the feet out from under her as much as they can,
right, from the start. Give her room to run.
Because if she is successful in Congress, you know, she'll be seeking higher offices, right? She's sticking in this political game.
Yeah.
And that's what the people on the right do. They start these hit campaigns that go on decades. So in 2040, when she's running for president, every Republican alive, or, you know, whatever we call the parties then, conservocrats.
She's probably going to be running in 2024, right?
Is she old enough?
That's when she would be old enough.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be interesting. I'm going to say I doubt that, but she does seem ambitious, so...
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not in the prediction game, but I don't know.
All right.
That would be interesting. that would be. But yeah, that's what I think is going on, is that they are just trying to make sure she is not relevant for broader office whenever that time comes. That's all this seems to me. Because otherwise, she's just one congressperson. Like, what's the big deal?
Because they're afraid of everybody who's going to try to act like her.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, don't try to beat us in the ground game. We suck at it.
But even, I was thinking about that earlier. Because I thought that to me is the obvious reason. And something, and it, you know, there could be a problem with it, but it'd still be their reason. You're getting angry over there, Charles, it sounds like. but the thing that is it really like that, like, earth? So, like, is it really that earth-shattering to everything if she wins? Because she probably will, right? Or that she won. Because it's like the work to make it a broader movement is like, there's still so much work between her winning this primary and that being a direct threat to the broader right movement. Like, there's so many candidates that would have to be in so many different areas of the country for this.
Yeah, but if that guy in Kansas, this seems like a good note to leave it off on for the week. But if Bernie and Alexandria's, like, campaigning in... No, never mind. She's here. Campaigning in Texas or Kansas and other parts of the country on behalf of progressive candidates actually is successful, then, you know, that would bode terribly for the red flyover states, right?
Yeah, and that might be it. And that might be actually just the very in-the-moment reason, is that she is going to Kansas. And that means there are people there who know of her, who noticed her, who heard her, that also might watch Fox News or things like that. And Fox News is trying to make sure that they are not turned away.
Not Alexandria, I was referring to my dog.
Yeah, don't. All right. Then let me do the roundup at the end. Email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. Twitter us at bloatednemesis and at @green_weird, which is WYRD.
Find our podcasts wherever fine podcasts are streamed. And if you want back episodes, go to stoneduckmedia.com.
Yes. And I think that is about it for this episode. All right. You have a good week, Charles.
You too, Pete. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yep. All right. Everyone, have a good one.
Full of peace. Some days it's sunny. Some days it rains. Destroy the myth and we'll break our chains. Break your chains.